Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
Good day, Mark. How are you doing?
Doing fine. How are you?
Good, thanks. We're going to talk about something today that sort of came along after I was in medical school, have been struggling to
A lot of things have come along since you were in medical school, Mike.
Right.
I hate to break it to you.
I heard
penicillin, x-rays.
they discovered that there's this organ in the body that actually is the master organ for pumping blood. They're now calling it the heart. And
Well, I've got to read up on that.
Me too. But today we're actually going to talk about a new protein system. In New Since Medical School, most of our listeners will know a lot about it, called the natriuretic peptide system. It's a system that is involved in the regulation of water and salt, and therefore is involved in pressure regulation, and therefore is involved in cardiac function and perhaps even structure. Now, what's interesting is that brain natriuretic peptide, abbreviated BNP, was initially identified in the brain, but it's primarily released from the heart, particularly the ventricles. What happens is there's a cleavage of the prohormone called pro-BNP, which produces a biologically active form as well as an inert form. There's also a cousin called atrial natriuretic peptide, not surprisingly abbreviated ANP. It's a hormone that's released from myocardial cells in the atria and perhaps also in the ventricles in response to volume expansion and perhaps also increased pressure on the wall of the atrium and ventricle. Both ANP and BNP have a diuretic, natriuretic, and hypotensive effect. They are thought to inhibit renin-angiotensin system and systemic and renal sympathetic activity. So among patients with heart failure, increased secretion of ANP and BNP may partially counteract the effects of things like norepinephrine and angiotensin II, and therefore limit the degree of vasoconstriction and, in turn, sodium retention. Anyways, that's probably more physiology than any of our listeners wanted to hear. The question that we're going to ask Mark today is BNP-guided therapy more effective than symptom-guided therapy when trying to care for people, adults particularly, with congestive heart failure? Mark, what did this study published in JAMA find?
Well, this is a little different from using BNP to diagnose heart failure, where it has been shown to be quite effective and even cost-effective as a way to help distinguish heart failure from other causes of dyspnea in the ER when you have a patient where you're not quite sure which direction to go there with therapy. This is using it to guide therapy in patients with known heart failure. So they found 500 patients over the age of 60 with systolic heart failure, and all of them had an ejection fraction of less than 45%. They were all NYHA class 2 or worse. Most were class 2 or 3, and they'd all been hospitalized for CHF in the past year, and they were only included if they had a BNP of 400 or higher if under age 75 and 800 or higher in age 75 and older. Eligible patients were then randomly assigned to get treatment that was guided by symptoms and BNP levels or treatment guided just by symptoms, listening to the lungs, looking at the ankles, those kind of things, following their weight, urine output, that kind of thing. Getting them to NYHA class 2 or better at the time of discharge was considered adequate symptom control in both of the groups. They all got standard medical therapy that followed usual guidelines. Outcomes were assessed blindly, and they had complete follow-up for 88% of the patients at 18 months, which is pretty good. They used intention to treat analysis, again, which is good, and using that, survival free of rehospitalization for any cause was similar between the groups. So 41% in the BNP-guided group, 40% in the symptom-guided group. So there really wasn't any benefit overall in terms of staying out of the hospital. They also looked at overall survival and quality of life, and those were similar in both groups. What they did see was a reduction in the likelihood that patients were hospitalized or rehospitalized, I should say, for heart failure as a specific diagnosis, 28% versus 38%. And they dredged around in the data, and they found what looked like more benefit in younger patients, healthier patients, and heavier patients. Hospitalization for CHF was significantly lower in the BNP-guided group, particularly the younger, healthier, larger patients, and doses of drugs for CHF and use of other medications like spironolactone were more likely in the BNP-guided therapy. So having the BNP-guided therapy meant that the doctors were a little more aggressive in using medications and more likely to prescribe other medications. So I'm not sure that's a good thing, but that was one of the findings. There wasn't any difference, though, in serious adverse events or renal failure, hypotension, things like that. And it was a big enough study to find a 30% relative risk reduction in mortality or all rehospitalizations.
So the bottom line is that this is something that you think we ought to all be using.
Well, I think it can be valuable. It does seem to prevent rehospitalization for heart failure, but the bigger picture is it really didn't affect survival. It didn't affect overall number of rehospitalizations.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't as helpful as one might have thought it would be.
Do you know how much a test costs? I assume it's a pretty inexpensive blood test.
Yeah, it's not. It's typically going to be in the range of $40 to $80, something like that. So,
which means
in the larger picture of, you know, hospitalization for heart failure, which can cost, you know, $10,000 easily.
Right.
It's a pretty minimal cost. They didn't see any difference in hospital length of stay, though, with the BNP-guided therapy, which would have been, you know, a real benefit if you could get folks out faster by tuning them up quicker.
Right.
That would save a lot of money, but they didn't see that.
Right. I mean, again, it just reminds me of, my training in the past, right? I lived as a house staff member by Swan-Ganz catheters, and I remember coming in the morning and copying all of these numbers into the chart that happened overnight, and
mm-hmm.
you know, only you know a decade or two later to be told that exactly what you're telling us about BNP was true, that it didn't get people out quicker, they didn't live longer, they, you know, it gave us some useful information and allowed the attending to come in the morning and you know teach us some physiology. But
it was great for the attendings and the medical students and the residents, and you know, not so good for the patients, but great for us. But
exactly,
you know, and that's again, there's this almost a seductive quality of having data, and you know, hard data and numbers to guide our therapy. And really, what this showed to me was that you can really do pretty much the same with a stethoscope and a brain and, you know, some clinical experience. So I think it's okay to use this. It may provide some benefit, but it's modest, and if you choose not to, don't feel bad.
Right. And I think it's also good to point out that it's really important that these studies are being done and are being published and being discussed so that we can know what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, otherwise we just add one more test, and instead of just listening to the patient and getting a chest x-ray, then we added the echo. Now we add the BNP and the D-dimer.
Right.
You know, where does it stop? I mean, pretty soon you're getting a lot of tests, and the incremental benefit of each additional test isn't necessarily there.
Good information, Mark. Thank you for sharing that with us, and we'll talk with you next week.
All right, great chatting with you. Thanks.
Good, thanks. Back to you, Meg.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.